From Fort Worth to Fort Hood, Fort Stockton to Fort Bliss, College Station to Corpus Christi, McAllen, the Woodlands, Midland, Amarillo, Beaumont, Abilene, and all points in between. No matter where you are, you're on Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown, and it's truly great to have you with us on this Wednesday, April 12th, one day after the junior senator from the Lone Star State assured residents of Denton that repeal of Obamacare is not dead. Joining us now live on the Texas Standard, Senator Ted Cruz. Welcome.
David, good morning. Good to be with you.
Before we get to Obamacare, a lot of Texans right now focusing on world events. You've said we don't need to get ourselves further involved in Syria right now. North Korea's threatening nuclear war as a U.S. naval strike group heads to the region. Senator Cruz, should we be bracing ourselves for war?
Well, I certainly hope not, but it is a dangerous world, and it has gotten much more dangerous in the last 8 years. If you look at Syria, Syria is a complete mess. There are no good options in Syria. Bashar Assad is a monster. He has repeatedly used chemical weapons on his own citizens, killing innocent men, women, and children. But the rebels fighting against him are even worse. They are ISIS and Al-Qaeda and al-Nusra. They are radical Islamic terrorists. And the worst outcome from U.S. national security interest would be for ISIS and Al-Qaeda to seize the chemical weapons and use them against Americans, and that is a serious risk.
Russians today warning our Secretary of State, don't strike Syria again, Washington. And I'm wondering, with regard to Syria, Senator, does the president need congressional approval to take any further steps there?
Certainly, if the administration intends ongoing military action, Congress's authority is required. The Constitution makes the president the commander-in-chief. He has the authority to respond to an exigent threat, to exigent circumstances. But the authority to declare war is given to Congress. And you know, one of the reasons for that, David, is that it forces a president to come to Congress and the American people and lay out the objective of any proposed military strategic plan to get there.
You know the landscape. Would it be justified? Should the United States go deeper here?
What I will say on this is that if the commander-in-chief comes to Congress seeking authorization for use of military force, I'm going to keep an open mind and hear the commander-in-chief fairly. Now, the question I'm going to ask and other members of Congress are going to ask is how does this protect the national security interest of the United States? And that's the central question that needs to be answered before we proceed any further down this road.
Does sending the warships closer to the Korean Peninsula help protect U.S. interests as you see it? I mean, we've had a sort of status quo standoff for a long time.
It certainly could. North Korea is, I think, the most dangerous place on Earth right now. Kim Jong-un, the dictator there, is mentally unstable. I'm reminded, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, John McCain referred to him as that crazy fat kid. And the North Korean press got very upset that McCain said that. And McCain's response was, what, should I have called him that crazy skinny kid? Which I thought was a good way of underscoring the fact that this is an unstable leader who unfortunately has a nuclear arsenal and in fact has threatened repeatedly to use nuclear weapons against the United States, in fact specifying Austin, Texas.
I recall that.
One of the targets.
I recall that. Does it make sense, though, to be poking at a madman who has nukes?
You don't want to poke at him, but at the same time, you want to engage in strategic deterrence. And North Korea is actively developing ICBMs, missiles to carry nuclear payloads to the United States. We want to do everything we can to discourage that. It's worth remembering the reason that North Korea has nuclear weapons is during the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton took the lead on negotiating a deal that gave North Korea billions of dollars in exchange for a promise not to develop nuclear weapons. They took the billions of dollars, turned around and developed the nukes, and it's why we're in such a dangerous situation. And I would note the same person that negotiated that failed North Korea deal is the person the Obama administration recruited to negotiate the Iran deal. And I fear we may be repeating the same pattern and in just a few years facing an Ayatollah in Iran like Kim Jong-un with nuclear weapons and a willingness to use them against Americans.
Senator, you've been crisscrossing the state. You call this a listening tour. What's your sense of how Texans think our president's doing?
Well, I think Texans are glad that we have changed the path we're on, that we're no longer on the path of the last 8 years. I think Texans were frustrated with policies from Washington of increasing taxes, increasing regulations, making it harder and harder for small businesses to grow.
But what about this president, though? How's Donald Trump doing, though?
Well, we're less than 100 days in. I think the substance of this administration has largely been quite strong. I think the cabinet appointments were excellent. This is a very strong cabinet. You look at someone like Jeff Sessions as attorney general. I think he's an excellent attorney general. I think he's the most conservative cabinet we've seen in decades. There are two Texans in the cabinet. You've got Rex Tillerson as secretary of state and Rick Perry as secretary of energy. I think it's a very strong cabinet. I think the executive actions and regulatory actions to date have been quite strong. Whether it is approving the Keystone Pipeline, which will allow tens of thousands of jobs to be created, or freezing federal non-military civilian hiring, or imposing a regulatory moratorium that for every new regulation, two old regulations must be rescinded.
Uh-huh.
All of those, I think, are good policies Texans like.
Well,
and I'll tell you, Texans are celebrating the confirmation of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. I think that was a major victory.
I think a lot of Texas Republicans and frankly others saw what happened with replace and repeal as it related to Obamacare. And a lot of people judge that on both sides of the aisle as a bungle of pretty epic proportions, given how central this has been to the GOP agenda. How is Obamacare repeal still possible, as you were telling the folks in Denton yesterday?
Well, look, there's no doubt that the initial forays to repealing Obamacare hit a rocky patch. And my view is we have to get it done, that Republicans have spent 7 years promising the American people, if you elect us, we will repeal Obamacare. If you give us the House, if you give us the Senate, if you give us the White House, we'll repeal Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the voters obliged, and we now have to keep our word. I think failure is not an option. Now, David, it's worth keeping in perspective. It took Obama 14 months to pass Obamacare. The House repeal bill was only on the floor of the House for 18 days when it was pulled down.
Mm-hmm.
18 days is not nearly long enough to pass major legislation impacting one-fifth of the economy.
I want to ask you forgive me for interrupting because I'm looking at the time and the time is tight. There's so much to cover here. I want to go back to something that one of your fellow Republicans has been talking quite a bit about here at home. Governor Abbott has thrown his support behind what he called a broad-based law that would preempt local regulations. He says the country is not called the United States of Municipalities. I know you've been traveling to, you know, we mentioned Denton and other places. Would you support Abbott's idea of this law to shift control from local government to state government?
Well, I'm a strong supporter of Governor Abbott. He is a good friend. He's been a mentor of mine. I worked 5 years for Governor Abbott when he was Attorney General. I was his Solicitor General representing Texas in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. So I think the world of Governor Abbott. You know, one of the things also, though, is that I'm serving in the United States Senate, and we've got our hands full with issues in at the federal level. And so, by and large, I try to stay out of state issues and leave those to the governor, leave those to the state legislature. And I'm confident we've elected good men and women who can handle them.
Well,
at the federal level, we have the opportunity to do something historic. If we follow through this year, repeal Obamacare, major tax reform and major regulatory reform, we could see millions of new high-paying jobs being created. And that's what all my time and energy is focused
on. But when you first entered the Senate, obviously you came in on this historic Tea Party wave, and now we're seeing a lot of those movements rebranding themselves more in line with the Freedom Caucus. In fact, some adding the word freedom to their names. And on the outside, the Republican Party seems increasingly fractured. Has the Tea Party done its thing now? Is the Tea Party over, served its purpose?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Reports of the demise of the Republican Party, I have to say, are kind of amusing because they're counterfactual. The Democrats electorally are in the worst position they have been in decades. Republicans control the White House, every executive agency, both houses of Congress, mm-hmm. a majority of the governorships, a majority of the state legislatures. In fact, ironically enough, if Republican county parties were to give an award to the human being who has elected the most Republicans in the history of the country, mm-hmm. it is undoubtedly President Barack Obama, who ushered in massive defeats for his party. And the reason is the economic agenda that was pushed by President Obama didn't work. We've been trapped for 8 years in stagnant 1% and 2% growth. People are hurting. And this election was a demand for change.
But, now, you know, it's interesting because right now a lot of the conversation has shifted just in the, you know, just the overall zeitgeist to from Obama to the President Trump. And I was looking at reports this morning, Hit the Hill, among others, reporting you've built up a campaign war chest of more than $5 million for reelection and almost $2 million of that since January alone. And I was curious about the timing there, Senator. You think Trump's helping you, or is Beto O'Rourke's challenge firing up your supporters, or what's going on there?
Well, I'm running for re-election. I'm up for re-election in 2018, and so I'm campaigning and raising money, and that's what you have to do to be re-elected. You know, my view of elections is real simple. There's an old adage: you either run scared or unopposed, and until I am the latter, I'm going to do the former. And so we're going to run hard. And I'm working every day to continue to earn the support, earn the trust of Texans. My job is to stand up and fight for 27 million Texans, to fight for Texas in the United States Senate, to fight for reducing taxes, tax simplification. I'd like to see a simple flat tax and abolish the IRS. I'd like to see term limits. I'm fighting for term limits. I'm fighting for regulatory reform and repealing Obamacare. All of these are designed to help Texas small businesses create more jobs, to drive up wages, to expand opportunity here in Texas. And I'll continue to make the case to the men and women that they should reelect me to keep fighting for them.
That is Senator Ted Cruz speaking with us live on the Texas Standard. Senator, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you, David. God bless.